The next morning, Dan Fisher came over to Jolina's and told me the emergency order of protection was in place. Now, if Merrill grabbed the children, he'd be in a lot of trouble. Dan said if I felt I still needed more protection, I could move into the battered women's shelter in West Jordan, but he added that he and Leni would be delighted to have us return to their residence. This was a no-brainer for me. My children had been too traumatized by our escape to go into the shelter system. I felt we would be safe enough at Dan's. He sat down and had coffee with me. "You have a real fight ahead of you," he said. "It might mean testifying against Merrill and Warren. Neither of these men is going to let you take your children without a fight." I knew what Dan Fisher was saying was true, but it terrified me. Dan said that my best hope of overall protection was to go into the Attorney General's office and tell him everything I knew about Warren Jeffs. Bryson started to fuss as I was taking in all that Dan was saying. I was trying to quiet him while I was shaking all over. "I know what you are saying is right," I said. "I will tell them everything I know. But backing out of the FLDS is only one of my concerns. How am I going to take care of my children and support us all? Harrison needs 24-hour-a-day care, and my other 7 children are traumatized and afraid of the outside world. My work at home is cut out for me, but I still have to find a way to feed us. Carolyn, listen to me. Of all the women I've helped, you are in the best shape of any of them." I wasn't sure what he meant. It seemed impossible to believe this was true. "It might take some time to get on your feet," Dan said, "but at least you have a college education and you're very intelligent." Dan said he would try to get an investigator from the Attorney General's office to meet with me and listen to what I knew about Merrill and Warren's crimes. He told me to take it a step at a time so I would not get overwhelmed. He also reminded me that I was now in an environment with checks and balances. A judge could rule on the evidence in my case rather than condemn me as an immoral woman. I could tell a courtroom about Merrill's abuse instead of having to talk to Warren Jeffs, another perpetrator. I was 35 years old and had never been in a fair fight or had anyone on my side. This was going to take some getting used to, but I was not backing down. That was one of the few things about my life I did know. Harrison awakened me the next morning with his crying. I gave him a bath and then took him outside to pull him around Dan's reservoir in a wagon. The morning was silent with a shimmer to it. Dew was still on the grass as the sun was beginning to rise. I watched 2 Canadian geese fly low toward the water, then skid across the surface of the reservoir before gliding to a stop. The world looked brand new. I was seeing life in color again. For 17 years, I'd lived in a blur of terror and fear. It had taken all my energy to survive my life. I'd noticed a sunset here and there, but there had been no time for beauty, wonder, or marvel. When I looked up, I saw a black truck on a hill above Dan's property. It was an FLDS truck. I was being monitored. My sweet moment vanished. The next day, I went with an attorney to file more paperwork for my order of protection. I also got a call from my father, who tried to convince me to stay out of the courts. He said he was sure Merrill would help me work things out and that I didn't need to make such a big fuss.